Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website chartcons.com. Question number one. Which Italian classical tenor became blind at the age of 12 following a football accident? Was that A, Andrea Bocelli? Was it B, Enrico Caruso? Was it C, Luciano Pavarotti? Or was it D, William the Refrigerator Perry? So who was that singer blinded in a football accident? And question number two, which later-to-be-famous solo singer and guitarist toured as a member of the Beach Boys in the mid-1960s? Was that A, Glen Campbell, B, Stevie Wonder, C, Willie Nelson, D, Neil Young, or E, Jimmy Page? Hint, here's a snippet from this singer's catalog. Who is this former member of the Beach Boys? The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program.
To anyone who can truly say that he has found a better way.
Our transitions come to us from TRRS and the New York Times. Well, it was 35 years ago on this very day, back in 1983, that Triangle Radio Reading Service broadcast the first ever broadcast. It was a one-hour program of the Raleigh Times, 35 years ago today. Happy birthday, TRRS. And finally, in transitions, Noki Edwards, whose guitar drove the Ventures, is dead at 82. Richard Sandomir, New York Times, the 20th of March, 2018, reports. Mr. Edwards' twangy tone, wang bar glides, and staccato riffing, one admirer wrote, paved the way for the California surf bands of the 1960s. Noki Edwards, dead at 82.
We shall overcome with me, please.
We shall overcome. We shall.
Joan Baez performing We Shall Overcome opens our country and folk music news. This is an article written by Stephen M. Deusner, published on the 10th of March, 2018, in Pitchfork.com. It's a review of Joan Baez's Whistle Down the Wind CD. June 2015, just days after a white gunman shot and killed nine African-American worshippers in Charleston, South Carolina, President Obama delivered a eulogy for the slain Reverend Clementa Pinckney that included an a cappella performance of Amazing Grace. It was a remarkable moment for many reasons, not least because it acknowledged that certain horrors and hopes were beyond his powers as a public speaker. That moment demanded a song. 2 years later, a folk singer, Zoe Mulford, wrote her own song about that day and called it "The President Sang Amazing Grace." It's a matter-of-fact lyric, as though reluctant to do anything but record history. The president came to speak some words, and the cameras rolled and the nation heard. It is, in other words, exactly the kind of song Joan Baez might have sung 50 years ago. And so, when Baez covers "The President Sang Amazing Grace" on her first album since 2008, "Whistle Down the Road," "Wind," it feels right. In its subject matter, as well as in its funereal pace, it recalls Birmingham Sunday, written after another act of white supremacist terror, the 1963 bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church. Baez included that song on her 1964 album, Five, and the extent to which her voice has changed over the last half century only underscores the extent to which the times have not. Her voice now sounds graver, more deeply grooved, by age, with a slight tremble as she recounts the violence in Charleston and its aftermath. Her vision is less pretty than Mulford's, less settled, less communal. When Obama sang "Amazing Grace," he was joined by a grieving congregation. When Baez sings about that moment, she sounds lonely, her optimism measured at best. Having lived through decades of protest song history, Baez knows how to gauge the state of the world and how to pitch her music to reflect it. She chooses songs that convey a sense of ambivalence about our country's fate, as though she must now work to muster something resembling hope. That struggle is what makes this album so compelling and ultimately so rewarding. Baez crafts a lo-fi acoustic palette that makes room for the occasional flub note and sounds all the more immediate and intimate for it. She sings "Another World" to an insistent thump against the strings of her guitar, which could be a racing heart or a ticking clock. As with the 2008 original, it's the details that put the song across and make it more than just a farewell. "I'm gonna miss the sea, I'm gonna miss the snow." Rarely has Baez ventured so far beyond the folk and roots world to find material, but the song suits her remarkably well, as both an ecological warning and as a personal consideration of mortality. For the most part, though, Baez doesn't sound like she's saying goodbye or setting her affairs in order, even if she has suggested that this will be her final studio album. To her credit, Baez continues her lifelong reluctance to settle for easy answers on "Whistle Down the Wind." She doesn't shy away from political protests, but she's careful to couch her dissent in the personal and the compassionate. "I'm the last leaf on the tree. The autumn took the rest, but they won't take me." She sings on the album's other Tom Waits cover, "Last Leaf." Baez makes such resiliency sound like a noble, necessary virtue. And in classical music news, we have this article entitled, "Why Do Orchestras Have So Many Violins?" This is published in ClassicFM.com on February the 13th, 2018, by Mady Shaw Roberts. "We're so used to seeing a symphony orchestra packed with violinists that we don't even think to question it anymore. But have orchestras always had so many violins? And why do they need them?" Let's take the Simon Bolivar Symphony Orchestra as an example. Here they are playing Beethoven's Symphony No. 5, conducted by Gustavo Dudamel, and there are probably about 20 violinists on stage. This is pretty normal, as a symphony orchestra is usually made up of, give or take, around 10 first violins and 10 second violins, 10 violas, 8 cellos, and 6 double basses. So why does an orchestra need 20-plus violins? Violins are well-suited to playing melody, making them one of the most important instruments in the orchestra. Firstly, they are the highest string instrument, so their bright tone rises above the rest of the string section. Secondly, they are played with a bow, unlike woodwind or brass instruments, which rely on air. This means that players are able to perform longer melodic passages with plenty of fast finger work. And why are there fewer woodwind and brass instruments? Imagine you're sitting next to a violinist while they're playing. Then imagine you're sitting next to a trumpeter mid-performance. The difference in sound is massive. In fact, in professional orchestras today, there are often perspex screens positioned in front of the brass, woodwind, and percussion sections to deflect some of the force of sound coming from them. So although violins have a high singing quality, they are not particularly loud. So just as you need more upper voices to make sure they're heard over the lower voices in a choir, you need at least two violins to get a balance of sound with the woodwind and brass instrument. But why do orchestras need two violin sections? While the first violin section normally has the melody or countermelody, the second violin section needs to play a lower harmony. This works in the same way for the woodwind section, except the numbers are far fewer. Let's use the oboe as an example. If you play first oboe, you are normally the only one playing the first oboe part, and therefore the only one playing that line of music. But if you play first violin, you are one of 10 playing that line. Simply put, there need to be enough violins to balance out the bright, penetrating sound of the oboe. It also is to do with classical music history. Since the Baroque period, violins have pretty much always been included in orchestral scores. Orchestras specializing in Baroque music tend to be much smaller and more focused on string instruments. In fact, pre-1700s, the leader of the first violin section led the whole orchestra instead of a modern-day conductor. However, in Romantic and 20th century music, composers like Mahler, Wagner, and Stravinsky began to write for a wider range of brass, woodwind, and percussion instruments. One result of that was that the orchestras playing Mahler's Resurrection Symphony or Stravinsky's The Firebird needed more strings because the sound of the non-string instruments needed to be balanced out. Today, the violin is an incredibly popular instrument, and some of the classical music's biggest stars are violinists. Think of Nicola Benedetti, Joshua Bell, and Isaac Perlman. But did this all happen by chance? Perhaps if Baroque composers had decided the oboe sounded better on the melody, we might be listening to orchestras with a very different makeup. Or maybe not. It's hard to imagine a symphony orchestra without those beautiful sweeping strings. And in music research and technology, we have this article written by Jonathan Ringen. It's published in Rolling Stone magazine on the 8th of March, 2018, entitled Smart Speaker Showdown. They'll play anything you tell them, but which is right for you? Apple HomePod. This is $349 from Apple.com. Apple completely upended standard speaker design, filing around 200 patents for its Siri-powered speaker, which creates rich, room-filling sound with zero fuss. It just works. But its downside is also classically Apple. Its smart functions are only compatible with Apple Music. If you care more about sound than virtual assistant capability, HomePod is hard to beat. And then there's Sonos One. $199 from Sonos.com. The little speaker has surprisingly robust sound. Want to talk to it? That part works well, too. It's powered by Amazon's Alexa, so you can play Amazon Music, Spotify, Pandora, and more. That open it sets it apart. Plus, you can buy two for the price of one HomePod to create stereo sound. Let's go back to the Apple HomePod and learn a little bit more about it. Well, Apple literally turned speakers upside down, placing seven horn-loaded tweeters around the bottom and a single woofer firing up the top. It also has six built-in mics, and that helps HomePod adapt to any room's acoustics. And what about the Sonos One? Well, here's some more details about that. The One is more of a classic speaker with a tweeter and a mid-woofer stacked on each other. In addition to Alexa, the device will also soon be compatible with Google Assistant, which does an even better job of understanding natural language. The coolest, smallest, and smartest. Make your existing speakers talk to you, dial up concert, films, and more. The Amazon Echo Spot, $130 from Amazon.com. This teensy orb has a feature that others can't match, a screen. Use Amazon Prime to dial up concert films like The Grateful Dead trucking up to Buffalo while you make dinner. The 1.4-inch speaker isn't mind-blowing, but it can be easily connected to others, best for your kitchen or bedside table. Then there's Amazon Echo Dot. This is only $50 from Amazon.com. What if you already have a stereo you love but want to get in on the smart speaker action? This hockey puck-sized gizmo will imbue your current sound system with state-of-the-art brain so you can tell it what you want to listen to and more. Go solo. It also works as a standalone unit, but don't expect much more than smartphone sound quality. And then finally, there's the Google Home Max for $399. Go to store.google.com. The smartest smart speaker, Google's simple, elegant device, has killer voice recognition tech. It will even tailor music to whomever is in the room. Killer sound, the largest of the bunch, giving it low-frequency oomph. Let your speakers be your brain. One, search by lyric. Tell these speakers, play the song I woke up naked on the beach in Ibiza to hear LCD sound systems losing my edge. Number two, tune your guitar. Alexa and Google Assistant both have apps to help you tune up, including standard and alternate tunings like Drop D. Number three, Newsy Playlist. It's the week after the Grammys, say. Play Grammy music, and any virtual assistant will serve tunes by the winners. And finally, number four, Beat the Intro. In Alexa's trivia game, you're tested on lyrics to hits that have key lines bleeped out. New challenges appear in the app daily. Dan performing My Old School from their 1973 album, Countdown to Ecstasy, introduces our rock and pop music news. Steely Dan, the guide, ranking every studio LP by the 70s most sophisticated band, from sardonic hits to lush jazz fantasies. This is written by John Dolan, published in Rolling Stone on the 8th of March 2018. We start out with three must-have albums, Pretzel Logic from 1974, Katie Lied from 1975, and Aja from 1977. Then we have four that are going deeper. For example, 1972's Can't Buy a Thrill, 1973 Countdown to Ecstasy, from which this song is, from. Then in 1976, The Royal Scam, and in 1980, Gaucho. And this article ends with two that are recommended for further listening. Two Against Nature is the name of their 2000 album, and Everything Must Go 2003, their final album, stared down death, The Last Mall, and Divorce, Things Missed the Most. With Testy Resignation and Slang of Ages features a rare surly vocal from Becker, who passed away last year. Rest in peace to the god.
Take her down to Mexico, she said.
Bob Dylan's Like a Rolling Stone introduces our local music news entitled, Two UNC Students Snuck Backstage at the 1965 Dylan and Baez Show in Raleigh and Left with an Interview of a Lifetime. This is written by Thomas Goldsmith, published in the News and Observer on the 16th of March, 2018. In 1965, singer-songwriter Bob Dylan crashed the gates of pop fame, searing top 40 radio with Like a Rolling Stone, and devastating the gentle image of folk music at the Newport Folk Festival. Dylan also visited Raleigh that year, playing an influential March 19 concert at NC State University's Reynolds Coliseum with Joan Baez. That night, the musicians took time for a frank and funny backstage interview with two UNC Chapel Hill students, giving them their full attention, despite the students' total lack of press credentials. A long sidetrack tape recording and photograph from that encounter recently surfaced at UNC's Southern Folklife Collection, a real find given the decades of fans and scholars' obsessive study of Dylan. The interviewer and donor of the tape is Bebo White, a 1967 UNC graduate who is now a distinguished California academic. That year was a legendary one for Raleigh's singers, artists, and scene makers. In addition to the Dylan Baez Show, the Rolling Stones gave a blistering performance in November, also at Reynolds Coliseum. In Raleigh's acoustic show, Dylan was also playing songs that changed the topic from social wrongs to the spinning workings of his own mind in newly written tunes like Mr. Tambourine Man and Subterranean Homesick Blues. Baez was the more famous of the two at that time. She sang some ballads and mountain music and joined Dylan for folk staples such as Wild Mountain Time. Ticket for the show, according to a poster, were just $2 to $3. The Southern Folklife Collection at UNC holds more than 250,000 sound recordings and is available to the public. So how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, which Italian classical tenor became blind at the age of 12 following a football accident? Was it A, Andrea Bocelli? Was it B, Enrico Caruso? Was it C, Luciano Pavarotti? Or D, William the Refrigerator Perry? So who was that singer blinded by a football accident? Correct answer. Answer A, Andrea Bocelli. As noted in Classic FM article titled 15 Facts You Never Knew, Bocelli is the world's most popular living tenor, a best-selling crossover artist, and a producer of fine wines. Despite always having problems with his eyes and being diagnosed with glaucoma early on, tragically, Bucelli lost his sight completely when he was just 12 after a blow to the head while tending goal during a soccer game. Despite the setback with his sight, the young Andrea showed huge potential as a singer, winning his first competition at just 14 with a rendition of O Solo Mio. However, it didn't seem that music was quite the right career choice for Bucelli. He went on to the University of Pisa to study law, but kept singing in bars for extra money. An Italian rock star introduced Bucelli to Pavarotti. In 1998, Bucelli finally took the dramatic stage when he played the role of Rodolfo in Puccini's La Bohème. Perhaps one of Bucelli's biggest moments, though, came in 1998 when he recorded a duet with Celine Dion, The Prayer. It was featured on the soundtrack to the film Quest for Camelot in the same year and has since been covered by all manner of classical crossover artists. In 2010, Bucelli was awarded his own star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. In 2015, Bucelli released Cinema, his 15th studio album. The tenor has longed to create an album of his favorite movie songs originally performed by singers such as Frank Sinatra and Mario Lanza. And the answer to our second question, which later-to-be-famous solo singer and guitarist toured as a member of the Beach Boys in the mid-1960s? Correct answer, answer A, Glen Campbell. December 24th, 1964 was an unforgettable day for Glen Campbell. It was on that date that the country crooner made his debut appearance with the Beach Boys, filling in for an ailing Brian Wilson at the Sam Houston Coliseum in Houston, Texas. As noted in Billboard.com, it was an exciting time, as Mike Love of the Beach Boys remembers. With screaming girls and good-looking, Glenn bore the brunt of it, losing a watch and getting his shirt ripped by more than enthusiastic fans. No matter when or where we were, Glenn, or the oldest living teenager, as he referred to himself, he was always witty, down to earth, and just a whole lot of fun to be with, Mike Love wrote. Campbell died of Alzheimer's disease this past August. So as a tribute, let's close out today's program with Campbell singing It's Just a Matter of Time.
Someday and some way, you realize that you've been blind. Yes, darling, you're going to need me again. It's just a matter of time.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. And as we leave you, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Music Review is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast in the TRRS website, TriangleReadingService.org. Now, if you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson, at 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.
What goes up must come down.